passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
This might be college football heaven. Yeah.
We have made it to Tuesday. Glad you're all with us. It's happening today. Some pretty big stories happening in college athletics, and we are going to get to them very quickly here this afternoon. By now, you have probably heard the report, and you'll hear from Pete Thamel in just a minute about what could be going on between some of the leaders of intercollegiate athletics, what's ahead as, once again, the industry faces a critical moment. There was the big one that shook up everybody yesterday from Pete. College sports leaders in deep talks to settle NIL antitrust case versus the NCAA. I'm sure you've seen the headline, but what's it really all about? That is the question we begin today's program with. And Pete Thamel, nice enough to join us. Pete, thank you. Great reporting. So for the novices out here, including myself, what is this all about?
Well, I think some of this stuff, Paul, including myself too, right? This is regarding the settlement of ongoing antitrust case. It's called House versus the NCAA. It's out of Northern California. There's some familiar characters involved if you followed these legal court cases over the years. The judge is Claudia Wilkins. She's obviously been at the bench for a few of these landmark NCAA cases. The lead plaintiff's attorney is a gentleman by the name of Jeffrey Kessler. He goes all the way back. You could teach a sports law class the amount of times he's wound through different labor organizations and different NCAA cases and such. So the news in the headline is that the discussions have intensified in the past week for the settlement of this case. There was a big meeting at the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport Hyatt, I'm sure it's glamorous, on Thursday. And after the CFP meetings, the power commissioners and all their general counsels, Charlie Baker, the NCAA lawyers, and the plaintiff's attorneys, and a few assorted others, more than 20 people gathered in a room, and they met for about 3 hours. And over that 3 hours, they started to put together essentially the framework of what a settlement could look like. It's a sharp change in the earlier discussions. There had been one other in-person meeting, my understanding is, and that was earlier this fall. So this in-person meeting in Dallas, what was put together is now being populated to campuses. It's being populated at conference meetings. It's being populated on conference Zoom calls this week. Conference presidents, Paul, within the next month are going to have to decide whether they want to settle this case. It would be a multi-billion dollar settlement. And there's two ways to look at this settlement. There'd be a settlement backwards. There would be giant checks cut for past damages. The House case in particular deals with name, image, and likeness. And athletes are going to get back pay, essentially, for name, image, and likeness in the past. Then there's future, and this is where this really matters and could end up being the structure for what college sports looks like in the very near future. And that future would have some type of revenue-sharing agreement. I was told it would be derived off a complicated formula that includes television revenue, that includes ticket sales, that includes et cetera. But the ballpark being given to campuses right now is a little more than $20 million per campus, essentially to revenue share with athletes. Now, there's still a bunch of unanswered questions, Paul. There are still objections from campuses that have to go. There are still commissioners that have to get in line and get all their presidents and campuses in line. This is not at the finish line, but it's way ahead of where it was last week. And there is a vision of what the finish could look like, which is a big deal for the future of college sports.
So, Pete, to look at the other side of it, if the NCAA and everyone else does not agree to this, what is that risk in the courtroom?
Billions and billions, Paul. Dan Murphy and I wrote the story on ESPN.com yesterday. The number we used was more than $4 billion. I was cautioned by sources that that number is actually conservative. The NCAA's record in lawsuits, Paul, as you know, is similar to your and my record in the World's Strongest Man competition. It's not very good. So they would risk going to a jury, losing again, which has been the case time and time and time again as the NCAA has gone to court. And so what these presidents and leaders have to decide, and it's not an easy decision, is do we put less billions up front and out of it get both a structure for the future of college sports, and here's a key term that's being thrown around, protections. Those are not set and settled and wouldn't be to the end, but does it say we are protected from future antitrust lawsuits? Not all lawsuits, obviously. They can't have like a shield around them, but do we get a protection from future antitrust lawsuits for 10 years, for a long period of time, that gives this chaotic world of college sports some sort of period of peace, which quite frankly, Paul, we haven't had the last two decades.
So if this happens, and again, this is in theory, what does that do to the rest of the potential plaintiffs out there?
So there are, my understanding is that there are four active antitrust cases right now. There's three in Northern California, and then there's one in Colorado. And there would have to be, through the settlement, some type of grouping of everything, right? Because what you can't do is settle this case and leave yourself exposed to other cases. And the case in Colorado is particularly a wild card because it's not under Wilkins' umbrella. So again, as we said, there has been progress, but there's a long way to go. And how the lawyers and how all of the different commissioners and NCAA officials can get their arms around all the cases, Paul, and getting them all settled so there can be a smooth path, or a relatively smooth path, I guess, going forward, is one of the things that's under discussions and is one of the roadblocks that still remains.
And Pete, ultimately, this case is against the NCAA, which is encompassing a lot of different entities, but why would, just a pedestrian question, which I know there's an easy answer to, or at least I hope there is, why are all these individual universities and conferences on the hook? Why isn't it the NCAA's problem?
So I believe it is the NCAA, it's House versus NCAA, but I believe the leagues are all named in the okay. case, Paul. So if the leagues are all named in the case, then obviously the schools are going to be involved. So I think that's the simple question, the answer to the question.
So if we're doing the math, 20 million, got a 16 school league here, we have 18 up the road. I mean, we're talking serious dollars here, aren't we?
Yeah, Paul, it's going to be a lot of money. Again, like any legal settlement, there's a lot of thought that goes into the risk reward, and the one thing that does go into settling here, along with mitigating the risk of future damages by losing in a jury trial, is you do get some sort of cone of peace, relatively speaking, around any antitrust cases for a period of time. They can allow college sports to move forward. And let's face it, Paul, the structure of college sports as it exists now is going to look radically different in 10 years. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what it's going to look like, but it's going to be radically different. And what some of the universities that are hesitant about jumping on board on this and spending this kind of money, they are saying, wait a minute, what if there is just some sort of radical change that comes in? There was obviously the Super League idea that had been floated by Len Perna and his crew for a while that's generally been dismissed because it's unpopular with the commissioners and the television networks, who are pretty important linchpins. But we are in a bridge period right now in college athletics, Paul, where you can get all the most important people in the room and they'll tell you everything is going to change. And then you can ask 20 different people what it's going to look like and they'll give you 20 different answers. This is an answer. It's relatively clean compared to like the massive complications that have come with other plans that have been floated, but I don't want to come off as Pollyannish either. Like this is the idea that's progressed seemingly the furthest and has been given the longest look that could radically change college athletics and the structure of it as we know it. But it's not without flaw, and certainly on the university level, they are viewing it as not without risk.
I know there are schools. I mean, based on Jimbo Fisher's buyout, that $20 million, you know, is lunch money. But there are plenty of schools in this boat that's a lot of money. Do we know much about? I mean, I realize we're still in the early days of this, but how do you view that part of it?
So my understanding, Paul, is it would work like this. Southern Miss, for example, doesn't need to have a $20 million rev share budget. All right, Southern Miss might not have a $20 million budget, period. And that's not to pick on Southern Miss. Your upper middle class Sunbelt school or MAC school or even Mountain West school, they are not expected to have rev share in that range. What this number does, and quite frankly, BC, Syracuse, Duke football, you know, schools like that don't necessarily need to have it either. But it gives you a target and essentially a cap for you can have this much money to revenue share. And it's essentially like natural selection for schools and how much they want to spend and what level they want to be committed at to annually pay their rosters. Now, they could pay softball. They, you know, I'm sure at Duke that would be weighted towards basketball. You know, similarly at, you know, Carolina, Syracuse, places, Kansas, obviously, Arizona, places where it's forward. So the fine point details of how that's all chopped up still, you know, still remains to be seen. But the thought is that there is a percentage of what you know, the average of schools are getting. And then, you know, the Alabama, Ohio State, USC, Texas, et cetera, that crowd can spend, you know, can allot for the maximum. We kind of heard Trev Albert say the quiet part out loud the other day. He said in an interview with the College Station paper, basically, I'm now setting $15 to $20 million in my budget going forward, starting in 2025, for revenue share for athletes. Like that's, there's, you know, on some campuses, there's an expectation of some form of this coming. A place like A&M obviously would be invested to the highest level. I would think a vast majority of the now Power Four would be invested that way, but it certainly, I don't think, would be all of them.
Incredible stuff. Pete Thamel, many thanks for you and Dan's reporting. We'll talk about this as the afternoon rolls on. We have a busy couple of hours ahead. Laird Veach was at Memphis a couple of weeks ago doing a great job with UM. Now he's at UM again, the University of Missouri. He's the new AD, and we'll talk to him in a few minutes. Jerry Tipton, a legendary sports writing career. He'll discuss it in his memoir. And Ross Dellinger on some of the issues that we just talked about and more later in the show from Yahoo and your phone calls.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Come back. Good chance to get some reaction. The number of guests will be zipping in and out of here, but you can give us a call now. And let's start with Bash in Boulder.
Bash, Brother Paul, how's it going today?
Bash, we are doing great. Thank you.
That is great to hear, Paul. Hey, I'm still, not going to lie, I'm still buzzing after last night, Paul. Here's a quick question. What's better than one Jamal Murray game winner?
Two.
Exactly. Nothing can beat one except doing it twice as nice, and we are on to the next round.
Yeah, it was, by the way, I saw it. I was down in Memphis yesterday speaking, and we all went out afterwards. And I'm not usually in sports bars at 11 o'clock at night, but it was pretty cool to see that shot in that environment.
and the environment is going to keep getting more high profile and exclusive, Paul. So this offer that I made to you is still valid, and I obviously made it with good intentions. But, you know, Paul, ever since I made the offer, I feel like I've been, and it's not your fault of any kind, but I feel like I've been purposely disrespected on this show by the producers, because on Friday I called in, waited an hour after the incredible interview you had with Kenny Chesney, and then after it concluded, after the first hour, Jamari hanged up on me. And then when I tried to call back, Jamari hanged up on me again. So I'm like, all right, I'm just not even going to try again. And then yesterday, Ryan McGee is the host of the show for 4 hours, and he's taking calls from callers multiple times while I'm on hold for 4 hours.
So he did what? And I'm like, Reggie, Bash, excuse me.
Well,
so you were what did Ryan do again?
He went to multiple, like, he took calls from, the same caller multiple times while I was on hold for 4 hours. I've never been on that hold for the, I mean, like I said, I think you and I, our relationship is good. I just think the rest of producers, they might want to.
Well, Bash, in the future, I will send you my schedule. So when I'm going to be out of town, I'll let you know, and then you can just skip the show.
You know,
we do not want you to be subjected to that mean old Jamari.
I mean, Jamari, of all the producers, and don't take this as a insult, Jamari, you're probably the worst one. Like, Dan is the man. Luke is Cool Hand Luke.
Yeah, Cool Hand Luke.
Alex
and,
is...
I wish I could have a producer caller feud right now, because I'm hearing Jamari's response to you, but you're not hearing it.
What is Jamari's response? Because he told me, he said, I wasn't there Friday. I'm like, yes, you were. You were clearly the one there Friday, and you're the one who said, Bash, I'll put you on hold.
Hold on a second. Jamari's consulting with his attorney right now.
Oh, he said, wait, I can't say anything my without my lawyer presence. Yeah, good man, Jamari. That's a clever response to having accusations thrown at you. But again, Jamari.
I would offer a little bit of advice here, Bash. Jamari,
yes, sir,
is a critical element to this program, and
I might
think twice about treating him as a dog treats a fire hydrant.
Like the same way Randy was trying to treat me when he said I was going to wag the newspaper at me. I'm like, you guitarist from Wake Forest.
He just called Randy. Randy's not even here today to defend himself. But I want to make sure, if Randy has a friend, make sure that Randy, like that guitarist from Wake Forest. A little bit of rhyme there. I'll give you that, Bash. Let's see if we can top Bash with John in Louisville.
Hey, welcome back, Paul, and a shout out to all your producers for smashing the Bash yesterday and Friday and Thursday and every other many days he's been disrespected. Hey, Paul, thoughts and condolences. You had four law enforcement officers killed in your community yesterday. It's terrible.
It was absolutely tragic.
Yeah. Hey, Ryan McGee did a great job, and I went to the NFL draft, I was telling him yesterday, and got to meet Barry Sanders, Megatron. And then on Saturday in the crowd was the current U of M football team, Bob Seger, the singer.
Bob Seger was there?
Yeah.
Even though he's older, is he still the same?
Yeah, he looked great. Sounded great. So he's going to go on tour. Who knows? And then Aiden Hutchinson looked great, too. But my thoughts on the NFL draft, I thought the best choice was Nick Saban by ESPN. I thought he did a marvelous job. He looked so much younger than he did in the Rose Bowl. You saw him along the sidelines. Did you see him on ESPN?
Sure.
Yeah, he was great. Animated, smiling, everything. And I thought Alabama won the first round. Michigan won the NFL draft, of course. They're known for player development. Atlanta, I'm still confused about that pick to sit a 24-year-old quarterback for 2 years. Denver had no choice. They had to reach for Bo Nix. But I think the only two quarterbacks with a future in the first year in the NFL are Caleb Williams and J.J. McCarthy, because they're getting the resources to succeed. What are your thoughts on the draft and any other quarterbacks in the first year?
Yeah, I thought Atlanta was just a complete boneheaded decision. But again, I'm never surprised when you have morons running your franchise. We'll take a short break. We have a lot to do this afternoon. We've already talked to Pete Thamel. We'll say hello to the new athletic director at the University of Missouri. He comes over. He's been in Missouri before working, but he comes over as from Memphis, where he was the AD there. Laird Veach joining us shortly.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Really excited to say hello to Laird Veach, who the other day was officially named as the new athletic director at the University of Missouri. Played ball at Kansas State, where he previously worked before becoming the Memphis athletic director. Great success story in Memphis. A lot of it's happening as he is leaving some of the work that he has been instituting. He returns to Missouri, where he worked nearly 20 years ago. Laird, thank you for being here. Congratulations. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate you having me on.
I know that sometimes it is difficult to make moves, especially when you had done so much in Memphis and had such great success, but I also realize, having been in Columbia, it probably made it a little bit easier to return. Your thought process as you found out about this opportunity and clearly said yes.
Yeah, you know, leaving is always a challenge, especially when things are going well, and it seems to sometimes work that way. When you start these things and have some progress, then you have to leave before you're able to sort of realize the benefits of it and see some of those things come to fruition here. But yeah, there's no question. Being back at Mizzou is just a real, you know, incredible fit for me and my family. And not only being in the SEC, but being in the Midwest and being in a place that, you know, we've been before and we know we love, and great friendships. So it's a pretty incredible, you know, win-win-win all the way around.
Well, Laird, you've obviously done this before, but when you get to a place, especially in, you can use whatever adjective you want to describe the current state of intercollegiate athletics, a lot of good things are happening there. Obviously, some things that you'll address. How do you dive in, you know, get the lay of the land, which I'm sure you have some clue of anyway, and lay out a blueprint for what is going to happen next?
Yeah, you know, it's not terribly complicated. It's pretty kind of obvious process that takes a lot of work. You got to really jump in and just ask a ton of questions, listen, really rely on staff there to download you on all the top kind of priority topics, you know, SEC folks, et cetera. There's going to be a lot of that in the coming weeks. And really try to focus on relationships and getting out, meeting people. You know, that is one of the advantages of being there before. It sort of amazed me how many people we've already heard from, that we connected with, you know, many, many years ago, and you know, have that background with. But there's going to be a lot of visits with a lot of folks over the next several weeks and months.
And obviously, you've been back, so you don't need a GPS to get your way around town. Your three of your daughters were born there. How much of a factor is familiarity to making this move and at least understanding the culture? You played not that far away, so you know that part of the country pretty well.
Yeah, I think understanding the culture and just, you know, it just helps you connect with people, you know, when you have, you know, similar backgrounds and history, and even just, you know, having a name that some folks kind of might recognize from back in those days. I think that gives you sort of a head start and an understanding of what you're dealing with. But, you know, you still got to get out there and do the work and reconnect. But there's no question it's certainly an advantage.
Laird, just in terms of dealing with all the things that are going on, we started the program off with Pete Thamel talking about the possibility of the NCAA and many of the conferences, you know, finding some accommodation in this litigation. I think we overdo it, but you're in the fishbowl. What's it like running programs right now in the current state of intercollegiate athletics?
Well, there's no question. It's a challenge. You know, certainly my perspective is about to change dramatically. You know, coming from a Memphis and, you know, Group of Five school, although I like to think it's right at the very top of that. And, you know, but you are in many ways sort of, you know, looking at SEC schools, Big Ten schools, and others, sort of wondering where they're gonna head, how they're gonna lead, and then, you know, being more of in a position to react to that and try to position yourself to be competitive in the new landscape. And now, you know, starting here this next week, I'll be jumping out of SEC meetings and learn a lot more about sort of where all this is headed. But we are at a time of, you know, just dramatic transition, and you got to be willing to think differently and be flexible and adjust and make decisions that, you know, we just haven't had to make in years past. So, I'm going to be relying on a lot of smart people there in Columbia and in the SEC offices to help guide the way.
You were in Columbia last year in September. Memphis played there, and did you ever think that you would be back in under 9 months as the athletic director?
Certainly not. No, this is not what I anticipated. It was, you know, it's for all the reasons we've discussed. It's always been a place that I kind of, you know, had an eye on and hoped might be a possibility, but, you know, the way things have worked out and the timing of it is was not anticipated, but certainly welcomed.
Laird, I did want to get some thoughts on what you mentioned a minute ago, because I was in Memphis yesterday and I heard a lot of Memphis fans talking about their position and really the progress that there seemed like. You ran the program. I was just dropping in, but there was such a buzz about Memphis with the FedEx intersection and the great season that was just completed and the role in the Group of Five. As you leave that, what are your thoughts on the Group of Five position, even at the top of the food chain where you were?
Yeah, you know, I hope my hope for Group 5 and places like Memphis, if it's not able to, you know, kind of finally realize that step up to, you know, the power level, as you know, that we've been knocking on that door and continue to have aspirations to position themselves to get there. You know, my hope is that for all those schools, they can find a structure and a path that really works and fits, but also maintains a connection with, you know, those power schools. And those schools, just like the schools, you know, above them and the power school power conferences are all sort of redefining and rethinking themselves. So where it all ends is I wish I could predict just as much as you or anybody else, but I am hopeful that there can really be a sort of a structure and a opportunity for those schools to really settle into who they are and still be really competitive, because these are great schools with, you know, particularly this one. I mean, from being a Memphian, you know what, you know, the university and these programs means to the city, and, you know, the opportunity here, it's real, and they're really starting to realize that more and more and doing all the right things. So you want really good things for programs like this one.
Larry, before you go, you alluded to it a minute ago about, you know, when you take on a new job, I mean, you do have to do a lot of listening. I mean, there's a number of things at Missouri that are in really good shape. I mean, this program has gone through a lot of different transformations. You just can't sit back and listen forever, but what is that experience like when you're trying to learn a place? Sometimes you take over when there's a specific reason that you better get the job at 5 o'clock the next morning because it's in chaos, which really is not the case at the University of Missouri.
Yeah, you know, you're correct in that, you know, all these places, while there's similarities, there are differences, and each place is different, each situation is different, so you have to, you know, sort of quickly get a lay of the land and identify, you know, not only the relationships that have to be established in the listening and learning, but also what are those sort of key, you know, big projects or initiatives, things that you need to jump into right away. And you, I'm sure, saw the announcement here about the North End Zone project and the big investment that, you know, university leadership is behind and setting forward. So there's no question. I need to jump into that right away and, you know, get my arms around it and find out how I can get out there and help secure those funds and help make that happen. So there's things like that that you have to really jump into quickly and understand. And it's important to kind of assess that current scene. But you're correct in that, you know, Mizzou's got some really good things going. You know, Coach Drink and the work that he's done, I've been really impressed with his sort of, you know, I call him more of the tradition, the CEO coach, kind of a more of a, you know, new age coach, really fits well with this environment that we're in. And so I look forward to working with him and others and seeing what needs to happen right away.
Well, Larry, thanks for the time. I would imagine this is a time of great happiness for your family, but also a little bit of chaos and just trying to figure out how to get everything transitioned. So we appreciate you making time and look forward to seeing you very soon.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. I appreciate you having me on. Take care.
My pleasure. Larry Deitch, the new athletic director at the University of Missouri, coming over from Memphis, where he did a spectacular job there. We'll take a short break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back. Rick is next from Houston.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. Did you enjoy your trip to your hometown?
Yeah, it was. It's always incredibly special to go back home.
So, hey, Paul, I got four callers I want to touch on. And the first one, he wins the You Must Be Some Special Kind of Stupid Award for the day. And that's Bash. You got to be really dumb to go after the person who holds the power over your phone call like he did to my man Jamari today. I've spoken to Jamari multiple times now, and he has been nothing but great and professional. And for Bash to go off on him today like he did, that was just
and Rick, listen, we don't run the show. This is not some authoritative or autocratic society. I mean, we don't mind callers having fun with us, but when you just blatantly attack the guy who runs the show for no good reason, what does that say about your character?
Absolutely. You know, Paul, and you know, if my phone hangs up, I just chalk it up to that the call got dropped. I would never accuse anybody of hanging up on me, but you know, that's just me. Second guy, Paul, is John from Louisville. Did he just say that he felt like Alabama won the first round of the draft?
No, hold on a second. No, Rick, you didn't like John's behind the scene, all access Netflix special on the draft.
Well, Paul, we get a daily rundown on whatever's happened, you know, on the previous show or, you know, the previous night's sporting events. That's John's call every day. It gets a little bit old, but did he not say that Alabama won the first round of the draft?
Yeah, and listen, I must have missed that. I'm not sure how Nick Saban's commentary gave Alabama the win, do you?
No, I can't. I mean, I'm not going to say anything. I thought Coach Saban did a fantastic job.
But that's not the issue.
Yeah, no, that's not.
Kalen DeBoer is the coach at Alabama now.
LSU had two players drafted before Alabama had one, and our third player was drafted before Alabama's third player was.
Alabama did have the final player taken.
That is true. And one can only hope that that young man has the same success that Brock Purdy's had.
That's a good point.
Paul, third caller is Chris from South Carolina. He called yesterday and basically told Ryan that Ryan was talking too much. He needed to shut up and not talk so much. And then he called a second time and said, hey, we're going to start off with this clean slate. And then he told Ryan the same darn thing. You're talking too much. I don't know, Paul. You know, the guy's a Clemson fan, so that should tell you all you need to know. And the last caller, Paul, is I feel like Augie must be pretty miserable right now because LSU's won two SEC series in a row. And he doesn't have anything to complain about the baseball team about, so he must be pretty miserable.
He's usually pretty unhappy when his team wins. Pat is up next in Georgia.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking the call. It's good to talk with you again. Jamari, he hung the moon as far as I'm concerned. He always knows who I am when I call in, and he's always happy to hear from me. I want to talk about antitrust, but if you'll permit me for just a minute, these protests that are going on all over the country, UT, Austin, and I think it's Columbia and New York. I'm a product of the 60s, and I survived being a flower child and Vietnam War protests and civil rights and all of that, but I'm beginning to think some of these, well, they say those who can do and those who can't teach. And I'm beginning to think some of these administrators, I don't know whether they don't know whether to scratch their watch or wind their ass. But let's talk about the antitrust. We're going to revenue sharing. You and I have talked about that before, and we're going to have a contract. It's going to be the NFL model, and it's just how soon we get there. Hello.
Yeah, Pat. I'm sorry. I agree with you on that. That is the road we're going down.
It's kind of, I mean, what did we think was going to happen when we got so professional under the guise of the student athlete? Now we still have some student athletes, and they're in the minor sports. But anyway, I think that's going to happen in my lifetime, and I'm already 75.
Well, don't go anywhere. You're still way too young. Pat, thank you for the call and the comments. Busy first hour with Famo and, of course, Laird Deitch, the new athletic director at Mizzou. We're going to change gears a little bit and talk about a man who has chronicled his career as a sports writer, honorable profession, at least I think it is. Jerry Tipton, legendary figure in the bluegrass, tells all in his new memoir, and we'll talk to him next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.